The great god Om waxed wroth, or at least made a spirited attempt. There is a limit to the amount of wrath that can be waxed 1 inch from the ground, but he was right up against it. He silently cursed a beetle, which is like pouring water onto a pond. It didn't seem to make any difference anyway. The beetle plodded away. He cursed a melon unto the 8th generation, but nothing happened. He tried a plague of boils. The melon just sat there, ripening slightly. Just because he was temporarily embarrassed, the whole world thought he could take advantage. Well, when Om got back to his rightful shape and power, he told himself, steps would be taken. The tribes of beetles and melons would wish they'd never been created. And something really horrible would happen to all eagles. And there would be a holy commandment involving the planting of more lettuces. By the time the big boy arrived back with the waxy-skinned man, the great god Om was in no mood for pleasantries. Besides, from a tortoise-eye point of view, even the most handsome human is only a pair of feet, a distant pointy head, and somewhere up there the wrong end of a pair of nostrils.
"What's this?"
he snarled.
"This is Brother Numrod," said Brother. "Master of the novices. He is very important."
"Didn't I tell you not to bring me some fat old pederast?"
shouted the voice in his head.
"Your eyeballs will be spitted on shafts of fire for this."
Brother knelt down.
"I can't go to the High Priest," he said, as patiently as possible. "Novices aren't even allowed in the Great Temple, except on special occasions. I'd be taught the error of my ways by the Quisition if I was caught. It's the law."
"Stupid fool!" the tortoise shouted.
Numrod decided that it was time to speak.
"Novice brother," he said, "for what reason are you talking to a small tortoise?"
"Because," brother paused, "because it's talking to me, isn't it?"
Brother Numrod looked down at the small one-eyed head poking out of the shell. He was by and large a kindly man. Sometimes demons and devils did put disquieting thoughts into his head, but he saw to it that they stayed there, and he did not in any literal sense deserve to be called what the tortoise called him, which in fact, if he had heard it, he would have thought was something to do with feet. And he was well aware that it was possible to hear voices attributed to demons, and sometimes gods. Tortoises was a new one. Tortoises made him feel worried about Brother, whom he'd always thought of as an amiable lump, who did without any sort of complaint anything asked of him. Of course, many novices volunteered for cleaning out the cesspits and bull cages, out of a strange belief that holiness and piety had something to do with being up to your knees in dirt. Brother never volunteered, but if he was told to do something, he did it, not out of any desire to impress, but simply because he'd been told. And now he was talking to tortoises.
"I think I have to tell you, brother," he said, "that it is not talking."
"You can't hear it?"
"I cannot hear it, brother."
"It told me it was—"
Brother hesitated.
"It told me it was the great god."
He flinched. Grandmother would have hit him with something heavy now.
"Ah, well, you see, brother," said Brother Numrod, twitching gently, "this sort of thing is not unknown among young men recently called to the church. I dare say you heard the voice of the great god when you were called, didn't you?
Metaphor was lost on Brother. He remembered hearing the voice of his grandmother. He hadn't been called so much as sent, but he nodded anyway.
"And in your enthusiasm, it's only natural that you should think you hear the great god talking to you,"
Numrod went on. The tortoise bounced up and down.
"Smite you with thunderbolts!" it screamed. "I find healthy exercise is the thing," said Numrod, "and plenty of cold water."
"Writhe on the spikes of damnation!"
Numrod reached down and picked up the tortoise, turning it over. Its legs waggled angrily.
"How did it get here,
"I don't know, Brother Numrod," said Brother dutifully.
"Your hand to wither and drop off," screamed the voice in his head.
"There's very good eating on one of these, you know," said the Master of Novices.
He saw the expression on Brother's face.
"Look at it like this," he said. "Would the great god Om holy horns, ever manifest himself in such a lowly creature as this? A bull, yes, of course, an eagle, certainly, and I think on one occasion a swan. But a tortoise?
Your sexual organs to sprout wings and fly away.
After all, Numrod went on, oblivious to the secret chorus in Brother's head, what kind of miracles could a tortoise do?
Your ankles to be crushed in the jaws of giants.
Turn lettuce into gold, perhaps, said Brother Numrod, in the jovial tones of those blessed with no sense of humour. Crush ants underfoot?
said Brother dutifully.
I shall take it along to the kitchen out of your way, said the Master of Novices. They make excellent soup, and then you'll hear no more voices, depend upon it. Fire cures all follies, yes?
Soup?
Said Brother.
Your intestines to be wound around a tree until you are sorry.
Numrod looked around the garden. It seemed to be full of melons and pumpkins and cucumbers. He shuddered.
Lots of cold water, that's the thing, he said. Lots and lots.
He focused on Brother again. He wandered off towards the kitchens. The great god Om was upside down in a basket in one of the kitchens, half buried under a bunch of herbs and some carrots. An upturned tortoise will try to right itself firstly by sticking out its neck to its fullest extent and trying to use its head as a lever. If this doesn't work, it will wave its legs frantically in case this will rock it upright. An upturned tortoise is the 9th most pathetic thing in the entire multiverse. An upturned tortoise who knows what's going to happen to it next is, well, at least up there at number 4. The quickest way to kill a tortoise for the pot is to plunge it into boiling water. Kitchens and storerooms and craftsmen's workshops belonging to the church's civilian population honeycombed the citadel. It takes 40 men with their feet on the ground to keep one man with his head in the air. This was only one of them, a smoky-ceilinged cellar whose focal point was an arched fireplace. Flames roared up the flue. Turnspit dogs trotted in their treadmills. Cleavers rose and fell on the chopping blocks. Off to one side of the huge hearth, among various other blackened cauldrons, a small pot of water was already beginning to seethe.
"The worms of revenge to eat your blackened nostrils!" screamed Om, twitching his legs violently.
The basket rocked. A hairy hand reached in and removed the herbs.
"Hawks to peck your liver!"
A hand reached in again and took the carrots.
"Afflict you with 1,000 cuts."
A hand reached in and took the great god Om.
"The cannibal fungi of..."
"Shut up," hissed Brother, shoving the tortoise under his robe. He sidled towards the door, unnoticed in the general culinary chaos. One of the cooks looked at him and raised an eyebrow.
Just got to take this back," Brother burbled, bringing out the tortoise and waving it helpfully. "Deacon's orders."
The cook scowled and then shrugged. Novices were regarded by one and all as the lowest form of life, but orders from the hierarchy were to be obeyed without question, unless the questioner wanted to find himself faced with more important questions like whether or not it is possible to go to heaven after being roasted alive. When they were out in the courtyard, Brother leaned against the wall and breathed out.
"Your eyeballs to..."
the tortoise began.
"One more word," said Brother, "and it's back in the basket."
The tortoise fell silent.
"As it is, I shall probably get into trouble for missing comparative religion with Brother Welk," said Brother. "But the great God has seen fit to make the poor man short-sighted, and he probably won't notice I'm not there. Only if he does, I shall have to say what I've done, because telling lies to a brother is a sin, and the great God will send me to hell for 1,000,000 years.
"In this one case I could be merciful," said the tortoise, "no more than 1,000 years at the outside."
"My grandmother told me I shall go to hell when I die anyway," said Brother, ignoring this. "Being alive is sinful. It stands to reason because you have to sin every day when you're alive."
He looked down at the tortoise.
"I know you're not the great god, Om," Holy Horns, because if I was to touch the great god Om, Holy Horns, my hand would burn away. The great god would never become a tortoise, like Brother Numrod said. But it says in the book of the prophet Sina that when he was wandering in the desert, the spirits of the ground and the air spoke unto him. So I wondered if you were one of those. The tortoise gave him a one-eyed stare for a while. Then it said,
"Tall fellow, full beard, eyes wobbling all over the place."
"What?" said Brother.
"I think I recall him," said the tortoise. "Eyes wobbled when he talked, and he talked all the time. To himself, walked into rocks a lot."
"He wandered in the wilderness for 3 months," said Brother.
"That explains it, then," said the tortoise. "There's not a lot to eat there that isn't mushrooms."
"Perhaps you are a demon," said Brother. "The Septuagint forbids us to have discourse with demons. Yet in resisting demons, says the prophet Fruni, we may grow strong in faith."
"Your teeth to abscess with red-hot heat."
"Pardon?"
"I swear to me that I am the great god Om, greatest of gods."
Brother tapped the tortoise on the shell.
"Let me show you something, demon."
He could feel his faith growing if he listened hard. This wasn't the greatest statue of Om, but it was the closest. It was down in the pit level reserved for prisoners and heretics, and it was made of iron plates riveted together. The pits were deserted, except for a couple of novices pushing a rough cart in the distance.
"It's a big bull," said the tortoise. "The very likeness of the great god Om in one of his worldly incarnations," said Brother proudly. "And you say you're him?"
"I haven't been well lately," said the tortoise.
Its scrawny neck stretched out further.
"There's a door on its back," it said. "Why is there a door on its back?"
"So that the sinful can be put in," said Brother.
"Why is there another one on its belly?"
"So the purified ashes can be let out," said Brother. "And the smoke issues forth from the nostrils as a sign to the ungodly."
The tortoise craned its neck round at the rows of barred doors. It looked up at the soot-encrusted walls. It looked down at the now empty fire trench under the iron bull. It reached a conclusion. It blinked its one eye.
"People?"
it said eventually.
"You roast people in it?"
"There," said Brother, triumphantly, "and thus you prove you are not the great god. He would know that of course we do not burn people in there."
"Burn people in there? That would be unheard of."
"Oh," said the tortoise.
"Then
"It is for the destruction of heretical materials and other such rubbish," said Brother.
"Oh, very sensible," said the tortoise.
"Sinners and criminals are purified by fire in the Quisition's pits, or sometimes in front of the great temple," said Brother. "The great god would know that."
"I think I must have forgotten," said the tortoise quietly.
"The great god Om, Holy Horns, would know that he himself said unto the prophet Wallspur,"
Brother coughed and assumed the creased eyebrow squint that meant serious thought was being undertaken,
"Let the holy fire destroy utterly the unbeliever." That's verse 65.
"Did I say that?"
"In the year of the lenient vegetable, the Bishop Creblefor converted a demon by the power of reason alone," said Brother. "It actually joined the church and became a subdeacon, or so it is said."
"Fighting, I don't mind," the tortoise began.
"Your lying tongue cannot tempt me, reptile," said Brother, "for I am strong in my faith."
The tortoise grunted with effort.
"Smite you with thunderbolts."
A small, a very small black cloud appeared over Brother's head, and a small, very small bolt of lightning lightly singed an eyebrow. It was about the same strength as the spark off a cat's fur in hot, dry weather.
"Ouch!" "Now do you believe me?" said the tortoise.
There was a bit of breeze on the roof of the citadel. It also offered a good view of the high desert. Fryett and Druna waited for a while to get their breath back. Then Fryett said,
"Are we safe up here?"
Druna looked up.
An eagle circled over the dry hills. He found himself wondering how good an eagle's hearing was. It certainly was good at something. Was it hearing? It could hear a creature half a mile below in the silence of the desert. What the hells? It couldn't talk as well, could it?
Probably, he said.
Can I trust you? Said Fryett.
Can I trust you?
Fryett drummed his fingers on the parapet. He said. And that was the problem. It was the problem of all really secret societies. They were secret. How many members did the Turtle Movement have? No one knew exactly. What was the name of the man beside you? Two other members knew, because they would have introduced him. But who were they behind these masks? Because knowledge was dangerous. If you knew, the Inquisitions could wind it slowly out of you. So you made sure you didn't know. This made conversation much easier during cell meetings and impossible outside of them. It was the problem of all tentative conspirators throughout history, how to conspire without actually uttering words to an untrusted possible fellow conspirator, which, if reported, would point the accusing red-hot poker of guilt. The little beads of sweat on Druna's forehead, despite the warm breeze, suggested that the secretary was agonizing along the same lines. But it didn't prove it. And for Fryett, not dying had become a habit. He clicked his knuckles nervously.
A holy war, he said.
That was safe enough. The sentence included no verbal clue to what Fryett thought about the prospect. He hadn't said, "Ye God, not a damn holy war, is the man insane?" Some idiot missionary gets himself killed, some man writes some gibberish about the shape of the world, and we have to go to war? If pressed, and indeed stretched and broken, he could always claim that his meaning had been, "At last, a not-to-be-missed opportunity to die gloriously for Om, the one true God, who shall trample the unrighteous with hooves of iron." It wouldn't make a lot of difference. Evidence never did once you were in the deep levels where accusation had the status of proof. But at least it might leave one or two inquisitors feeling that they might just have been wrong.
Of course, the Church has been far less militant in the last century or so, said Druna, looking out over the desert, much taken up with the mundane problems of the Empire.
A statement, not a crack in it where you could insert a bone disjointer.
There was the crusade against the Hodgsonites, said Fryett, distantly, and the subjugation of the Melchiorites, and the resolving of the false prophet Zeb, and the correction of the Achelians, and the shriving of the...
But that was all just politics, said Druna.
Yes. Yes, of course, you are right.
And, of course, no one could possibly doubt the wisdom of a war to further the worship and glory of the great God.
No,
none could doubt it, said Fryett, who had walked across many a battlefield the day after a glorious victory, when you had ample opportunity to see what winning meant. The Omnians forbade the use of all drugs. At times like that, the prohibition bit hard, when you dared not go to sleep for fear of your dreams.
Did not the great God declare, through the prophet Abbas, that there is no greater and more honourable sacrifice than one's own life for the God?
Indeed he did, said Fryett.
He couldn't help recalling that Abbas had been a bishop in the citadel for 50 years before the great God had chosen him. Screaming enemies had never come at him with a sword. He'd never looked into the eyes of someone who wished him dead. Now, of course he had, all the time, because of course the Church had its politics, but at least they hadn't been holding the means to that end in their hands at the time.
To die gloriously for one's faith is a noble thing, Druna intoned, as if reading the words off an internal notice board.
So the prophets tell us, said Fryett miserably.
The great God moved in mysterious ways, he knew. Undoubtedly he chose his prophets, but it seemed as if he had to be helped. Perhaps he was too busy to choose for himself. There seemed to be a lot more meetings, a lot more nodding, a lot more exchanging of glances, even during the services in the great temple. Certainly there was a glow about young Vorbis. How easy it was to slip from one thought to the other. There was a man touched by destiny. A tiny part of Fryett, the part that had lived for much of its life in tents, had been shot at quite a lot, and had been in the middle of melees where you could just as easily be killed by an ally as an enemy, added,
or at least by something. It was a part of him that was due to spend all the eternities in all the hells, but it had already had a lot of practice. "You know, I travelled a lot when I was much younger," he said. "I have often heard you talk, most interestingly, of your travels in heathen lands," said Druna politely. "Often bells are mentioned." "Did I ever tell you about the Brown Islands?"
"Out beyond the end of the world," said Druna, "I remember, where bread grows on trees and young women find little white balls in oysters. They dive for them, you said, while wearing not a stitch."
"Is something else I remember," said Fryett. It was a lonely memory, out here with nothing but scrubland under a purple sky. "The sea is strong there. There are big waves, much bigger than the ones in the Circle Sea, you understand, and the men paddle out beyond them to fish, on strange planks of wood, and when they wish to return to shore, they wait for a wave, and then they stand up on the wave, and it carries them all the way to the beach."
"I like the story about the young swimming women best," said Druna.
"Sometimes there are very big waves," said Fryett, ignoring him. "Nothing would stop them. But if you ride them, you do not drown. This is something I learned."
Druna caught the glint in his eye.
"Ah," he said, nodding. "How wonderful of the great God to put such instructive examples in our path. The trick is to judge the strength of the wave," said Fryett, "and ride it."
"What happens to those who don't?"
"They drown, often. Some of the waves are very big."
"Such is often the nature of waves, I understand."
The eagle was still circling. If it had understood anything, then it wasn't showing it.
"Useful facts to bear in mind," said Druna, with sudden brightness, "if ever one should find oneself in heathen parts."
"Indeed."
From prayer towers up and down the contours of the citadel, the deacons chanted the duties of the hour. Brother should have been in class, but the tutor priests weren't too strict with him. After all, he had arrived word-perfect in every book of the Septuagint and knew all the prayers and hymns off by heart, thanks to Grandmother. They probably assumed he was being useful, usefully doing something no one else wanted to do. He hoed the bean rows for the look of the thing. The great god Om, although currently the small god Om, ate a lettuce leaf.
"All my life," Brother thought, "I've known that the great god Om," he made the holy horn sign in a fairly half-hearted way, "was a great big beard in the sky, or sometimes when he comes down into the world as a huge bull or a lion or something big anyway, something you could look up to. Somehow a tortoise isn't the same. I'm trying hard, but it isn't the same." And hearing him talk about the Septarchs as if they were just some mad old men, it's like a dream.
In the rainforests of Brother's subconscious, the butterfly of doubt emerged and flapped an experimental wing, all unaware of what chaos theory has to say about this sort of thing.
"I feel a lot better now," said the tortoise. "Better than I have for months."
"Months?" said Brother. "How long have you been, ill?"
The tortoise put its foot on a leaf.
"What day is it?"
it said.
10th of Groon,"
said Brother.
"Yes. What year?"
Notional serpent."
"What do you mean, what year?" "Then, 3 years," said the tortoise. "This is good lettuce, and it's me saying it. You don't get lettuce up in the hills. A bit of plantain, a thorn bush or two. Let there be another leaf."
Brother pulled one off the nearest plant, and lo, he thought, there was another leaf.
"And you were going to be a bull?" he said.
"Open my eyes, my eye, and I was a tortoise."
"Why?
How should I know?"
"I don't know," lied the tortoise. "But you're omnicognizant," said Brother.
"That doesn't mean I know everything."
Brother bit his lip.
Well, yes, it does.
"Are you sure?"
Yes.
I thought that was omnipotent.
No, that means you're all-powerful. And you are. That's what it says in the Book of Ossory. He was one of the great prophets, you know.
I hope, Brother added.
Who told him I was omnipotent?
You did.
No, I didn't.
Well, he said you did.
Don't even remember anyone called Ossory, the tortoise muttered.
You spoke to him in the desert, said Brother. You must remember, he was 8 feet tall, with a very long beard, and a huge staff, and the glow of the holy horns shining out of his head.
He hesitated, but he'd seen the statues and the holy icons. They couldn't be wrong.
Never met anyone like that, said the small god Om.
Maybe he was a bit shorter, Brother conceded.
Ossory, Ossory, said the tortoise. Nah, can't say I...
He said that you spoke unto him from out of a pillar of flame, said Brother.
Oh, that Ossory, said the tortoise. Pillar of flame, yes.
And you dictated to him the Book of Ossory, said Brother, which contains the directions, the gateways, the abjurations, and the precepts. 193 chapters.
Oh, I don't think I did all that, said Om, doubtfully. I'm sure I would have remembered 193 chapters.
What did you say to him then?
As far as I can remember, it was, Hey, see what I can do, said the tortoise.
Brother stared at it. It looked embarrassed, insofar as that's possible for a tortoise.
Even gods like to relax, it said.
Hundreds of thousands of people live their lives by the abjurations and the precepts, Brother snarled.
Well, I'm not stopping them, said Om.
Well, if you didn't dictate them, who did?
Don't ask me. I'm not omnicognizant.
Brother was shaking with anger.
And the Prophet Abyss? I suppose someone just happened to give him the codicils, did they? It wasn't me.
They're written on slabs of lead 10 feet tall.
Oh, well, it must have been me, yes. I always have a ton of lead slabs around in case I meet someone in the desert, yes.
What? If you didn't give them to him, who did?
I don't know. Why should I know? I can't be everywhere at once.
But you're omnipresent.
Who says so?
The Prophet Hashimi.
Never met the man.
Oh, so I suppose you didn't give him the Book of Creation, then?
What Book of Creation?
You mean you don't know?
No.
Then who gave it to him?
I don't know. Perhaps he wrote it himself.
Brother put his hand over his mouth in horror.
That's blasphemy.
What?
Brother removed his hand.
I said that's blasphemy. Blasphemy? How can I blaspheme? I'm a god.
I don't believe you.
Want another thunderbolt?
You call that a thunderbolt?
Brother was red in the face and shaking. The tortoise hung its head sadly.
All right. Not much of one, I admit, it said. If I was better, you'd have been just a pair of sandals with smoke coming out.
It looked wretched.
I don't understand it. This sort of thing has never happened to me before. I intended to be a great big roaring white bull for a week, and ended up a tortoise for 3 years.
Why, I don't know.
And I'm supposed to know everything, according to these prophets of yours who say they've met me anyway.
You know, no one even heard me.
I tried talking to goat herds and stuff, and they never took any notice. I was beginning to think I was a tortoise dreaming about being a god. That's how bad it was getting.
Perhaps you are, said Brother.
Your legs to swell to tree trunks, snapped the tortoise.
But, said Brother, you're saying the prophets were just men who wrote things down.
That's what they were.
Yes, but it wasn't from you.
Well, some of it was, perhaps, said the tortoise. I've forgotten so much the past few years.
But if you've been down here as a tortoise, who's been listening to the prayers? Who has been accepting the sacrifices? Who has been judging the dead?
I don't know,
said the tortoise.
"Who did it before?"
"You did."
"Did I?"
Brother stuck his fingers in his ears and opened up with a third verse of Lo, the infidels flee the wrath of Om. After a couple of minutes, the tortoise stuck its head out from under its shell.
"So," it said, "before unbelievers get burned alive, do you sing to them first?"
"No."
"Oh, merciful death. Can I say something?"
"If you try to tempt my faith one more time..." The tortoise poised. Om searched his fading memory. Then he scratched in the dust with a claw.
"I remember a day. Summer day. You were 13.
The dry little voice droned on. Brother's mouth formed a slowly widening O. Finally, he said,
"You believe the great god Om watches everything you do, don't you?"
"You're a tortoise. You couldn't have..."
"When you were almost 14 and your grandmother had beaten you for stealing cream from the still room, which in fact you had not done, she locked you in your room and you said, 'I wish you were